The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Good evening, everyone. Honored Rabbonim, Rebbitzins, Chazonim, guests, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, good friend Natie. I'm very happy to see that we have a bumper crowd this evening. When originally I selected the topic, Are Women Succeeding in Their Roles of Leadership and Influence, a Torah Perspective, my colleagues told me that you get a lot of women, they'll be interested, but the men won't come. And I said that they will exercise their influence and leadership and make sure that the men are here also. And I'm happy to see that I was right. I'm a little nervous this evening because almost everyone, as they greeted me this evening, said, all the men, tread carefully. So we're walking on a minefield this evening. And I hope that our words will be accepted well by the women and also by the men. For the past 25 years or so, we've heard much about male chauvinism, women being second-class citizens, we've seen the proliferation of women activists, the birth of the women liberation movement, the feminist movement, a surge for women's rights, women's equality. Today, women have achieved more rights than ever in the Western world. Equal jobs, equal pay. We find today women driving trucks, auto mechanics, naval officers on U.S. destroyers, accountants, prosecutors, doctors, chief executive officers of large public corporations, and even presidents and prime ministers of many nations. And they have very capably proven that they can be equal to the men. The above subject is not what we're going to speak about this evening, because that subject is devoted to the principle that women can be like men, women equality. Rather, this evening, we are concerned with the distinctive and unique qualities of the woman. Not that they merely can be like men, but they can be women. What gets lost in all of the shuffle and confusion are these qualities, how unique and distinctive these qualities are, how powerful the feminine qualities are, and contrary to public opinion, how they have consistently influenced and molded history at the very highest levels. Jewish history, Torah history, and the history of our own nation. Because of the West's preoccupation with only women equality, very tragically, the role of women's uniqueness becomes lost, and the world is left wanting and lacking of this vital influence. A leading industrialist once commented that the world, government, society in general, is sorely lacking the feminine qualities and influence. He was immediately reminded that today women occupy many, many leading positions in all spheres of life. He answered, that is not feminine influence. That's masculine influence. They are merely emulating and copying their male colleagues who occupy similar positions. In other words, if God would have wanted another man after the creation of Adam, then he would have created one. Instead, he created a woman. I would like to examine this evening in the light of our Torah, because there's a wealth of information and illustrations on this point. Let us start with our matriarch Sarah. Torah tells us in Vayera, Sarah saw the son of her handmaid Hagar, this was Ishmael, that was born to Abraham, Mitzahek. He was an evil influence on her son Yitzchak, Isaac. Vatemel Avraham, and she told to Avraham, Goreisho Oma Azeis Vesbeno, take this woman and the son and chase them out. Kilo Yirash Ben Oma Azeis Imbidim Yitzchak, because he will not inherit the dynasty that is coming from the great Avraham, Abraham, with my son Yitzchak. And the sages relate how Avraham took this. This was his son. He loved him. He loved both of his sons. Avraham was the man of great compassion. And now his wife is saying that he should drive them out. And God said to Avraham, do not look badly at this. Whatever Sarah tells you in this regard, listen to her. Because the inheritance, the dynasty, which from there was to come out, Israel, the Jewish nation, the promised nation, that would receive the Torah for the world, will go through Yitzchak. And the sages comment, we see from here that Abraham was very much smaller and secondary to Sarah when it came to prophecy. Now, let's examine this for a minute. This is something worthy of thought. We're going to draw from many illustrations this evening, so we'll have to only briefly dwell on each one. Are we speaking here of equality, women equality, or a women distinctiveness, a uniqueness? Abraham was perhaps the greatest individual that ever walked the earth. The sages say, Vayihi Or, when the Almighty said, let there be light in the creation, he had his mind on the physical light and on a spiritual light. That was Abraham that would be born generations later. He would be the one that would bring light to a dark world. He did not want, no one does, to chase his son away. But Sarah saw what the great Abraham did not. From Isaac was to become the succession. He was to be the great successor to Abraham. Had Sarah not taken this action, then there would not have been a Jewish nation. There might have been a nation of Ishmaelim, but not a Jewish nation. Who groomed Yitzchak for leadership, for this type of role? Was it Abraham? Abraham was willing to share this leadership with both of his sons. He wasn't willing to sacrifice one for the other. And Ishmael was older. The inspiration came from Soren. The molding of his character and the grooming him for leadership came from Soren. And one should not wonder that Soren was a prophetess, because the Talmud tells us there were 48 great prophets and 7 great prophetesses. That's a proportion of 13%. That means that if you would have 100 great prophets in a room, 13 would be females. We'll go to a second example. Rebecca, she was the wife of Yitzchok. She was having great difficulty bearing children. And Vatelech Lidresh, she went to ask Hashem what was happening. Vayemar Hashem lo. And the Almighty told her that you have 2 great nations in your womb. One will be Jacob, and the other will be Esav. Sages say the prophecy came to her, not to her husband Isaac. As they grew up, the Torah tells us, Bayav Yitzchok es Esav. Yitzchok loved Esav. Rivka oheves es Yaakov. Rivka loved Yaakov. Esav was to become the arch enemy of Israel. From Esav was to become what the sages say the most ruthless empire the world has seen, the Roman Empire. From the Roman Empire came Amalek, and came the modern day Amaleks. Came the old Amaleks of Haman and the modern day Amaleks of Germany and Hitler, Yimach Shemai. Yet Esav was very, very clever, and he deceived his father, and his father loved him, but he did not deceive his mother. She saw what he was, and she loved Yaakov. As they grew up further, it states, Rivka summoned her son Yaakov, and she said that I heard that your father wants to give the brachas, the blessings. These were the blessings that Hashem gave to Abraham, which was going to be given to our nation. He wants to give these blessings to Esav. Now, Benish Ma Bekeli La Asher Ani Matzav Esav. My son, listen to what I am telling you. You go, take these goats, prepare them, go to your father, and tell him that you are Esav, in order that the brachas, the blessings, should come to you. And Yaakov said, but my brother is full of hair, and I am smooth, and if my father touches us, it will bring curse and not brocha. And she said, O likely losko bini, I will accept the curses. You go and do as I said. And we know the rest of the story. Are we speaking here of an equality or a uniqueness? She was a prophetess. More to think about, it states that she was the daughter of Besuel, who was an evil man. She came from Padan Aram, an evil place. She was the sister to Lavan, another evil man. And she rose up to a height where she saw what the great Yitzchok did not see. Who groomed Jacob, who was to become our father? Israel is known as Beis Yaakov, the house of Jacob, who was to become the most perfect man on earth, whose image is shewed on the Kiseh HaKoved, on the throne of the Almighty. Who groomed him for leadership? Was it his father? His father was prepared to make Esav the leader. He was second fiddle. It was the inspiration of his mother. The Vilna Gaon says that had these blessings been given to Esav, then all would have been lost. There would have never been a Jewish nation. There would have never been the giving of the Torah to the world. These two episodes that we quoted, we see an enormous power in a woman when it comes to the children. We see the instinctive insight of a mother. We see further that both of these women stood up against their husbands. They defied their husbands. This is something to ask. Sages tell us that a righteous woman helps her husband, listens to her husband. And yet here we're speaking of the wives of Avraham and Yitzchak. The sages also tell us that the Almighty created woman as an Ezer Kenegdoi. When the man does right, and he does what's right in the eyes of the Almighty, then she should be an Ezer, a helpmate to him. When he goes away from the Almighty, then she should be Kenegdoi, she should stand against him. And we see further. In these two episodes, they fashioned world history, Jewish history, Torah history at the highest possible level. Another illustration. Rachel, the wife of Yaakov, Rachel, our mother, besides the fact that she and Leah brought up 12 world great sons, the 12 Shvatim, it states that she, when she died, her husband Yaakov buried her, Ephroso, on the way to Ephrat, he based Lochem, on the roadside. And the sages ask, why did he bury her on the roadside? Because when we will be exiled and we will be going down that road out of Israel, Rachel will get up from her grave and she will go to the Almighty and she will ask for compassion. And it will be through her that the children will be returned to the land. A little further background in this. In Yirmiyahu, the prophet Yirmiyahu, it states, Kol beroma nishma, Kodesh Baruch Hu hears a voice on high, Nehi bechi samrurim, a voice of weeping, bitter tears, Rachel mevak al baneho, it is Rachel, Rachel is weeping for her children, Me'ano lehinochem al baneho, and she refuses to accept comfort, ki eineno, because they are no longer here in the land. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, answers her, Mini keilech mibechi ve'enayech midimo. Hold back your crying and your tears, because yesocha lefulaseich, you will be rewarded for all that you have done. Yishtik v'lachriseich, there is hope in the end. B'shavu bonim ligvulam, your children will return to their boundaries. What is the background to this? The sages say that when Israel will take idolatry and they will place it in the most holiest places and the Almighty's anger will burn, all of the patriarchs and the matriarchs will go to him and ask him to forgive the children, and he will refuse. And our mother Rachel, she will go to him and she will say that when Jacob came to marry me and he worked 7 years for me, and then my father switched my sister in my place, did I become jealous to the point where I revealed her Not only did I remain silent, but I even gave her the signs, the secret signs that I had made up with my choson Yaakov. Now, if I could do that, and I am only a woman of flesh and blood, then you, the Almighty, certainly should not become jealous when your children bring idolatry into your Beis HaMikdash, but you should be silent and forgive them. And the Almighty answers, Yofel Omarata Sigiduria, you have spoken rightly, Yeshocha Lepulaseich, and in your schus, in your merit, the children one day will be returned to their land. Here we're speaking of the Golus. We're speaking of being returned to Eretz Yisrael. And in whose house? Not in Avraham, and not in Yitzchok, and not in Yaakov, but in the house of Rachel Imenu, our mother Rachel. And the rabbis explain, the Maral Miprag, this was a rightful role for Rachel, because she was the real wife of Yaakov, and therefore she was the Akeres HaBayis, the pivotal point that unites the house. And therefore she would be the pivotal point that again would unite the house of Israel when they all go to all corners of the earth. It will be her strength that will bring them back together again. This is a uniqueness, a distinctiveness. Today, one of the greatest concerns of the world and of world governments is the alarming disintegration of the family, the breakdown of the home. Rachel had that power that she gave to all of the women of Israel to unite our homes. Another case, Miriam states that a man went from the house of Levi and he married a daughter of Levi. This was Amram and Yocheved. Amram and Yocheved lived in Egypt when Pharaoh decreed that all male children should be destroyed, Jewish children. Because of that, they became divorced. They separated and said, we should not have any more children. Now they were reunited. Why? The sages say, Holach ba'atzeis bitoi, because of the influence of their daughter Miriam. She went to her father and mother and said that your decree is harsher than Pharaoh. Pharaoh only decreed against the male children, and you have decreed against both the male and female children. They listened, they said she's right, and they remarried, and they gave birth to a child, and the child's name was Moshe, Moses. Moshe was to become the Goel, the Redeemer of Israel from Egypt. He was to become the one that would go up to the heavens and bring down the Torah and Shavuos to the world. He was to become the greatest prophet the world has ever seen, Lekom Od Kibosha. And he was to become the greatest leader and warrior of Israel as he led them to the borders of Israel. His birth was because of a woman, of Miriam, his sister. And she further risked her life when she went to guard him when he was in the basket in the river, and then went over to the daughter of Pharaoh. The sages say that she took her life into her hands. Again, we could not mold history at a higher level. Another example. It states in Parshas Vayakhel that when it came to making the fountain of the sanctuary, it was made from the copper mirrors that all of the women brought forth. And the sages tell us the daughters of Israel had copper mirrors. And they would look into these mirrors, they would beautify themselves, and these also they wanted to contribute for the construction of the sanctuary, when Moshe said that he needed copper. And Moses refused to accept them because they're made for vanity. What place do these have in the sanctuary? Omale HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty said, Kabel, accept them. Ki elu chavivin alai min hakol, these are more dear to me than all of the other contributions. Because it was through these mirrors that they brought up great generations of Israeli children in Egypt. Because when their husbands would come home from a full day of slave labor, and they were exhausted and fatigued, they would bring them to eat and to drink, and they would take out these mirrors, and they would look into the mirrors, and they would tell their husbands, look into the mirrors and see how much more beautiful I am than you. And they would arouse the interest of their husbands. And because of this, they gave birth to many, many children. And this was the generation of Egypt that went out. And on this, sages say, Bishus Noshim Tzidkonies Nigolu Yisrael Mimitzrayim. It was through the merit of the righteous women that were in Egypt that Israel went out. And they explain, first of all, we needed a number to go out, and that was because of them. Secondly, we needed great children to go out and to receive the Torah, and that was because of them. And thirdly, there had to be an ultimate of purity. And states in the 210 years that Israel was in a strange land, there was only one case of immorality. All of this credit the sages give to the women. The loyalty to their husbands, the dedication, faithfulness, the family purity, the bringing forth of this great nation. And yet another illustration. At the sea, the raging sea, and Egypt coming down from behind and closed in by the desert, and Israel had no way to turn. The Almighty executed the great miracle of the Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the Red Sea, and Oz Yoshir Moshe, and Moshe and the nation broke out into a great song. It is written, Vateitzenu kol anoshim achareho besupim ubim cheles. The women also broke out in a great song led by Miriam, but with one difference. It states that the women sang with musical instruments. Muftoches hoyu tzidkonie shebedor. The sages comment, the righteous women were confident that a great miracle would take place. Shakorish bacho eiselem nisim. Behetzi tupi mimitzrayim, and therefore they brought their musical instruments with them as they went out of Egypt. There was so much to be concerned with as millions of Jews are fleeing Egypt. Yet the women made sure to bring musical instruments because they knew there would be a very great miracle and we would have to sing and praise. The men didn't, but the women did. They showed a far greater trust in the Almighty than the men. Again, we're not speaking about equality, but a uniqueness. And then even further, Moshe went up to the mountain to receive the Torah. Vayikra Elav Hashem, and Hashem called to him and he said, Koseima Levesh Yaakov Visagid Livnei Israel. Speak to the house of Jacob and to the sons of Israel. And the sages ask, who is the house of Jacob and who are the sons of Israel? The house of Jacob are the women. The sons of Israel are the men. And the question is asked, why should he speak to the house of Jacob, to the women, before the men? And the answer is stated, because the Almighty was coming to give the Torah, and it was no sure thing whatsoever that Israel would accept. Torah was not something easy to accept. Until then we had 7 commandments we must obey. The Torah included 613 commandments that we must obey. The fact is, when the Israel did accept, this was considered the nasa v'nishma of their very greatest achievements and deeds. So the Almighty decided he has to go with a strategy. And therefore he told Moshe, first offer the Torah to the women, because the women will accept. Then offer it to the men. And when the men see that the women have already accepted, then they will follow. This is the answer to that question given by the Maral Miprag. He was more confident that the women would accept this Torah than the men. And it was too grave of a situation to take a chance. And therefore he said, Kosoma Levesh Yaakov, go to the house of Jacob, to the women first, and then to the men. We're speaking here of leadership. They were closer. They had greater trust and at the highest possible level. Another example, the golden calf. There were 2 cardinal sins that the nation of Israel transgressed. The first one, which was brought shame to our nation forever. And the first one was the golden calf. At the giving of the Torah, while Moshe was on the mountain studying the Torah, they went and they made for themselves idolatry. The sages compare this to a bride who committed an act of unfaithfulness to her groom in the wedding chamber. Disgrace. And the Almighty said that there will never be a generation that will be free of this sin. Every time I bring punishment, it will include some of the punishment for the golden calf. Aaron said, he told the people, go to your wives and ask them for their golden jewelry so we can make a golden calf. And it states that the men brought their golden jewelry. What happened to the women? The women refused to participate. The women did not sin at the golden calf. We're speaking of very, very high levels here. Their loyalty, their dedication, their faithfulness, their strength was not equal to men, but was far greater. And yet another illustration. The second great cardinal sin that was a disgrace to our nation forever was that of the Maragli, the spies. They came to the borders of Israel after 1 year of leaving Egypt. They decided that they're turning around. They will not go into the land. And they spoke Lashon Hara. They slandered. They slandered Moshe. They slandered the Almighty. They slandered the land. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, the Almighty said at this time, he said, 10 times you have tried and tested me, and each time I forgave you, but this time I will not. He said that I will destroy you and make a new nation from Moshe. And Moshe pleaded, and Hashem said, all right, this is what I shall do. Bamidbar hazeh yitlu fi greichem. In the desert, this generation shall die. Anyone over 20 years old, he shall wander in this desert for 40 years. And a new generation will go into the land which they despised. That generation died in the desert. Their children went into the land. That episode took place on the 9th day of Av, Tisha B'Av. The sages say that it was from that time that Tisha B'Av became set aside for the greatest destructions to our nation. It was because of that that eventually the first Beis HaMikdash temple was destroyed, the second temple was destroyed, and our exile. And the exile we're in now, which is Tisha B'Av, does not only represent what took place then. It represents the pogroms, the crusades. It represents the Holocaust. This was the gravity of that sin. Yet when they came to the borders 40 years later to go into Eretz Yisrael and they recounted the people, it states that there was not a man there who was amongst the original men that came out except Yeshua Vekolev. And our sages comment, ish, there was not a man there. But the women were present because they refused to participate in that plot, in that tyranny to go back to Egypt. They wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael. They said, the men said, let's make a new leader and we will go back to Egypt. The women said, we will go to Israel. Here again, we're speaking of molding Jewish history at the highest possible level. And we're speaking of a trust and a loyalty to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a staying power, a refusal to be swayed, a love and dedication to Eretz Yisrael. And yet another illustration. There was the famous woman, Ruth, that on Shavuos we will read about her. She married Boaz. She had a son by the name of Obed. And he had a son by the name of Yishai. And he had a son by the name of David, who was to become King David. Now, Ruth was the daughter of a king, the king of Moab, Eglon. She forsook the palace of her father, her family, her nation, all of that honor and enormous wealth, to come to the land of Israel with her mother-in-law as a nochris, as a stranger, as a comfort, without any wealth and honor and panoso. She had to go and gather the sheaves in the field from the ground in order that they should not starve. All of this was because she was dedicated to her mother-in-law and dedicated to the God of Israel. What did she bring with her? She brought herself to Israel. She brought the dynasty of King David to Israel, that from here our kings will be forever. She was known as Ima Shel Malchus, the mother of kingship in Israel, and she brought with her also the Melech HaMashiach, Vimhei Ravi Amenu, the Mashiach that will be born from that household, that will once again bring us back to Israel and perfect the world. A further illustration, there was a great woman by the name of Hannah. She was the mother of Shmuel, of Samuel the prophet. She said that she takes a vow, if the Almighty will give me seed, I will dedicate him to the house of Hashem. She was granted a son. She dedicated him to the house of Hashem. He became one of the world's greatest prophets, Shmuel Samuel, where the sages say, Shokol Kemesha Rabbeinu. In many ways, he was equal to Moshe, to Moses. Further, when she came to the sanctuary and she prayed to Hashem and she wept because she had no child, V'chana hi medaberes al libo, and she spoke with her heart, Rak sfaseha na'os, her lips only moved, the kelele shomea, her voice could not be heard, by Shaveha Eli the Shikora, and Eli, the Kohen, he thought that she was drunk with wine. And the Gemara tells us, in Masechta Brachos, Omar Rav Amnuna kame hilchasa guvrosoi, ika lemishma mehanikroi, that we learn out the foundation of our prayers from Hannah. She was speaking with her heart. From here we learn that when one prays, when one davens, he must daven from the heart. Her lips were moving. From here we learn that when one prays, he must enunciate the words with his lips. Her voice could not be heard. From here we learn that when one prays Shemein Esrei, he should not say the words out loud, and that someone who is drunk cannot pray. Besides bringing into the world, and she was the one who made the vow, not her husband, that I will dedicate him to you, Hashem. Besides bringing into the world the greatest prophets, the one who anointed our kings, the greatest power, it states, in Israel is Torah Utfilah, Kol Kol Yaakov, and the foundation of prayer is learned from the uniqueness of this woman. And then there was Esther. Haman vowed, Lahashmi Lahareg al Abayis Kol HaYehudim, to utterly destroy and eradicate all Jews, children and old, men, women, on one day. The sages comment, never in our history was the entire Jewish nation under such danger of total eradication. All of the Jews of the world were in the sovereignty of Ahasuerus because he ruled the entire world. And Mordechai came to Esther and she said, all right, I will go to the king, even though it's risking my life. Gather all the people, fast for 3 days and 3 nights, and I also will. and she put on her garments of royalty, and she went to the king, and the king said, "What do you want?" And she said, "I want you and Haman to come to a party that I am making today." She had to work quickly. And at that day she said, "I want you and Haman to come to a party tomorrow." And Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, this was not a simple story. King Solomon in Mishlei says, Chochmeis bones bonso beisoi, the wisdom of a woman has built our house of Israel. She had a whole plan, a ploy. She had a strategy. She would invite, she had to desperately make a wedge between the alliance of Haman and Ahasuerus. Haman was the arch enemy and his power was coming from Ahasuerus. So she had to make a wedge between them. And she had only hours to do it. And the sages explain, and the Vilna Gaon explains, that she would invite Ahasuerus to a private party with the exception of Haman. And she would speak nicely to Haman. And he aroused jealousy by Ahasuerus, that why all of a sudden, what's Haman doing with my queen? And then again the second day, and that night Ahasuerus couldn't sleep. He was worried about it. And then the second day she would do it again, until she successfully drove in this wedge, and then she could spring the trap. And Shlomo HaMelech said, Chochmas noshim bonso beiso, who has built the house of Israel? The wisdom of our women. Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, was the wisest of all men. And then finally, there was Yehudis. Yehudis was the one to go up to war against them and to overthrow our oppressors. And why was she in the forefront? Because of promiscuity, the hegemon, the ruler of the Greek nation, the governors, had passed decrees that every Jewish bride must spend a night with them before a night with their grooms. And she went and she said, how can the men of Israel tolerate this? Will they sit and do nothing? And she reared them on. And in general, the Gemara tells us that women are obligated in the four cups of wine on Pesach, in the reading of the Megillas Purim, and in the candles of Hanukkah. And even though these are mitzvahs which are governed by time, Shafein Hoyebei Senes, because they were also involved in the miracle, and the Rashbam, one of the Balei Tosfos, says, what does that mean? Because these miracles were because of them. It was through the righteous women that we were redeemed on Pesach. Purim was because of Esther, and Hanukkah because of Yehudis. Now I say finally, not because the list ends there. There are many more. There was the daughter of Parai that defied the mighty king Parai to save Moses. And Hashem accepted the name she gave him. There was Zipporah, the wife of Moses, that saved him many times. There was Devorah, who was the great judge of Israel. There was Yoel, Ashes Hever Akedi, who killed Sisera, the great general of the king of Canaan. There was Rachel, the wife of Rebbe Akiva, our greatest teacher of the oral law. I say finally, not because the list ends there, but because rather our time is coming to an end. Now what have we learned from all of this? We learned firstly that women can become quite powerful. We've learned about topics of bringing children into the world, giving birth to a nation, guarding these children, guarding the purity of the children, bringing up these children, uniting the house, their great bringing purity into the home, their great trust in the Almighty, guarding our nation against evil, against the golden calf, against the tyranny, against the plan to go into Israel, against such arch enemies as Haman or the Greek Empire. We learned about the great power of prayer. We learn about the eternity of the nation that comes through the house of David. We learn how they have constantly brought our nation closer to the Almighty. Naturally, men and women have different ways of going about things. Generally, the way of the men was overtly high profile. The way of the women were more covertly low profile. And this perhaps explains to us what took place with Devorah and Barak. Devorah, who was the great prophetess, and she summoned Barak, the great general, and she said, "Now is the time to go to war against the hated king of Canaan." The Almighty says, "They have been oppressing us." The Almighty says, "He will give them into your hands." And Barak was afraid. They were mighty. And he said, "I'll go to war only if you will be beside me." And Devorah answered, "I will do that. Ephes. Ki lo yetifatecho. But you will not have the glory of this victory yourself, but because you demand I should go with you, you will share it with a woman." And later on, Sisera, the great general, was running away, and Yoel wooed him into her tent. She gave him to eat. She gave him cheese to make him thirsty. She gave him wine to get him drunk. He fell asleep. She took the spike of the tent and a hammer, and she bore it through his temple. And that won the war for them. And it was as Devorah said, "The glory will not be yours, you'll be shared by a woman." And there's a question there. But anyhow, it would have been shared by a woman. Devorah was the one that was calling the shots. She was the one that was giving instruction. The answer is, for Devorah to give the instruction as a prophetess, that is not a strange way for a woman. As mentioned before, we had many prophetesses. But Barak demanded that Devorah should come with him to war. And he was the general, and he would ride in the front chariots, in the first tank, which meant that Devorah had to be with him in the front of the troops. Ubonais lav benais milchomaninu. And the Gemara tells us that women are not warriors. This is how he was changing the scene. So she said, "You want to do that? Then the victory also will come in a strange manner. It will come through a woman warrior that will kill the general." Now, after we have all of this information, let's take a look as what is there for the woman of today. The woman of today can exercise enormous leadership in bringing Jewish children into the world, enshrining in them sanctity, spiritual strength from conception and onward. They can exercise enormous influence in bringing up these children with good habits, good health habits, good derech eretz. The Vilna Gaon writes, "Hergo sheled al kol dover." Greatest strength of a person are his good habits, because that he carries with him all of the time. They can bring them up with love, with self-assurance, self-worth, self-confidence, with Torah. They can seek the best Torah facilities possible for them, with an inspiration to face life. Life is not easy. An inspiration for leadership, to do great things, to instill in them midas tovus, love, compassion, generosity, charity, forgiveness, modesty, humility, privacy, simcha, optimism, happiness, faith, good friends, they can teach them and influence them to distance themselves from all of the bad traits, from lashon hara, from slander, from machlekes, from quarrels, from lies, from violence, from the love of violence that we watch all the time to entertain ourselves, from promiscuity, from bad health habits, from selfishness, from materialism, from depression. Now, we certainly are not exempting men from all of these roles. But the woman is certainly no second fiddle to the man when it comes to these things. The fact is, they are and they can be a leader. They can be a great leader when it comes to establishing the purity of the home, when it comes to inspiring and influencing their husbands. There was a story once told that a man, a mayor of a city, and his wife was inspecting a construction site, and the wife saw a person, one of the workers, and he was wearing a hard hat, and she started to carry on a friendly conversation with him. Later on, the mayor asked his wife, "Who was that you were talking to?" So she said, "You know, I haven't seen him for years. He was a boyfriend of mine in high school." So the mayor said, "Aren't you happy that you married me, the mayor, rather than that hard hat?" She said, "If I would have married him, he would be the mayor today." Now, this is a story that's in the sages. Sages tell us there was a great righteous man married to a great righteous woman. And they decided one day they will separate and each will get married again so they can influence others. And they married people that were not righteous. And the woman that married a non-righteous man influenced him to become a great tzaddik. And the man that married a non-righteous woman became himself a non-righteous man. There is the molding and safeguarding of the entire nation. Now, finally, let us take a quick look at the world we live in today. The world we live in today is a world, firstly, of war, violence, and arms of destruction. It was recently published, now that we're 50 years celebrating the end of the Second World War, that Hitler killed was responsible for the death of 55 million people. That's how many died during the Second World War. Stalin himself, another 60 million. Since World War II, there have been another 50 million deaths by war. We're speaking of the entire world. There's Somalia, Ethiopia, Angola, Rwanda, Bosnia, you name it. It's a world of crime, murder, armed robbery, rape, hijacking, muggings. This is a South African problem, but it's also a world problem. It's a world of promiscuity, premarital, extramarital, illegitimacies, abortions, AIDS, rape, sexual crimes, child abuse, pornography. Currently, there's the new pornography bill in Parliament to totally liberalize it. It's a world of the disintegration of the home, which has become a major problem in the world today. Divorce, infidelity, wife battering. It's a world where individuals are sick and crippled, physically, socially, psychologically, psychiatrically, sexually. Those that lack self-worth, self-conscious, self-confidence. It's a world of deterioration of morals and time true values. That's a brief summary of the world we are living in today. By nature, women are contrary to everything that we said. Women are not warriors. Women are not violent. Women are not arms dealers. It's a rarity when you find a woman a criminal, when you find an armed robber, a rapist, a hijacker, a mugger. By nature, women are not promiscuous. They are far more modest by nature than men. And this, whatever I'm saying, is backed up by Gomorrah's. When it comes to the disintegration of the home, the women are the ones who have always been the stalwarts of the home, the uniting factor of the home. Perhaps the women, perhaps the world, has too much masculine qualities in it and too little feminine qualities at every level. At the level of bringing up the child, because it's those children that will make up the world. At the level of the home, at the level of the community, at the level of the world, at the level of government. Yes, there's women in every position. But these women, are they portraying their feminine qualities in these positions, or masculine qualities? It's interesting to note that some secular writers have begun to think this way. Just recently in Time magazine, where they spoke of May 8th, the 50th anniversary of VE Day, after giving a rundown of how many millions and millions that have been killed in this century, they write, "Mankind has not learned the lessons of war," and they put emphasis on the gender mankind. Wars have been fought in our centuries by men, not by women. A few years ago, there was an essay in Newsweek where the writer wrote, "We are producing the typical male warrior." Typical male warrior. The fountain of the potential female uniqueness and the potential female qualities, is it being tapped? Are these qualities in the forefront of world action? The world desperately needs the female quality of the woman, not only the male quality of the woman. If God would have wanted another man after the creation of Adam, then he would have created a man. Instead, he created a woman. Thank you.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za. Or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.